I've been thinking a lot lately about, well, I'm always thinking about teaching and learning, and today's episode of Tipple is devoted to a conversation with a student about those issues, because I've been thinking a lot about my own learning experiences and what it was that turned me on to both learning and teaching. I thought about, interestingly enough, it was after I graduated from college, I had a two-week fellowship at Sturbridge Village. And it was revelatory to me. I don't think I had ever thought, now I went to college a long, long time ago, and I would say 90% of my faculty in college lectured. And some of those faculty members were terrific at lecturing and held my attention for the entire class period. Some of them not so much. So when I graduated and had this opportunity to learn for 2 weeks solid at Sturbridge Village as an early American historian, the fact that, yeah, we spent some time in the classroom, but that I could take what I was learning in the classroom and move out and literally embody what it meant to think about the past, I don't think I thought about teaching or learning the same way after that. As a result, for me, that's why I went into museums for a couple of decades before I came back to college. And so for me, that ability to embody the past, particularly as an early American historian, was instrumental in making me excited about being both a learner and a teacher. So we're going to continue this conversation today, and I am delighted to welcome Sarah Fayed to the podcast, to Tipple. And, I want to give Sarah a chance to talk a little bit about herself.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sarah, and I'm really excited to be here today. I'm also very nervous, but I'm really excited. Just a little bit of context and background about me. I'm a junior here at WestCon, and I'm an English major, and this is only my second semester here. I transferred from Naugatuck Valley, and I was fully online there, so it was definitely a different experience than coming to WestCon. Over there, it kind of felt like going through the motions. You know, I don't want to say I'm very academically inclined, but, you know, I did very well for myself. I passed all my classes. I performed very well, but coming to WestCon and just seeing the vast, like, just there's so much here, it was crazy to that transition. But I love English, and I love studying English, because for me, I love people and I love perspectives, and I love how they're like, just as like a small little thing that I like to do whenever I'm driving, and I don't drive, so whenever I'm in the backseat of the car, I love to look at people, and I'm like, oh, I wonder what their life is like. Where are they going? What are they doing? Just everyone's life is so different. Their experience is so different. Who they are, their identity, their personality, the people they know. I love people, and I love different things, and I think that's why I love literature so much, because the literature encapsulates that person, what they were doing at the time, and you learn so much about into history. You learn about the history and the context and all that. And I'm here today because I just joined the CELT committee through SGA. I'm a recently appointed senator just this semester. And I don't know, I really think that what you guys do here is very important. I think there's always learning to be done. And I think that's exactly something that you guys promote.
Did you always know that you wanted to study English?
Oh, that is a good question. No, I used to want to be a mailman. That was my first dream.
And excellent.
And then it switched to, you know, like when kids say, oh, I want to be this when I grow up. I wanted to be a DNA scientist. I didn't know what that meant. I wanted to be an animal scientist. I was all over the board. But once I started to get serious, writing has always been my thing. You know, I'm not really a math girly. I'm not a science girly. That's not me. Because I think some people love that with math, there's almost always one right answer. I love that there's never a right answer with writing. It's all about you and what you have to say and how you want to express that through your words and how you want to take what other people have written and then put a spin on it and do that. But actually, writing for me is like not, it's not the final goal. I would love to be a kindergarten teacher. That's what I want to do. I think there is nothing better than being that guiding force for a young child at kindergarten. You're like a third parent for them, you know? They're with you for so long in the day, and they just need those really positive role models. And I think that they're at the building blocks of their entire life. You know, you're helping them form that foundation. So that's what I really want to do.
That's lovely. And so clearly being a storyteller is instrumental to being able to work with kindergartners. I'd argue that being a storyteller is instrumental in conversation and yes. teaching, no matter what the age of the student is.
Agreed.
So that's, you know, the preparation that you have and your interest and your passion will serve you well. And they'll be lucky to have you in the kindergarten classroom. And we're delighted to have you at Western Connecticut State University, too. And I can't tell you how thrilled we are that we have an SGA representative on the CELT Advisory Committee now. It makes a world of difference to us. I don't think we should be doing anything without working with students. So this is terrific. Let me just ask you, as the focus of this conversation, what some of your most positive learning experiences have been. And it can be, you know, inside the classroom, outside the classroom, online, face-to-face, not related at all to formal learning. So what is it that sparks you? In fact, if you want to talk about the distinction between online learning, yeah. then start there. Let's talk about that.
Okay. So the online course that I took was Latinos in America with Dr. Bandhauer, and she's phenomenal. She's wonderful. But the online method of learning is just different in many ways. She made sure to have all of our voices, you know, whatever we want to say. But I think being in the classroom and almost like when it's more discussion and conversation based, like we're doing here, conversation is very important to me because I love hearing input from other people. And this is going to go off track a little bit, but in my Caribbean literature class with Dr. Buchanan, we do a thesis workshop where every time we have an essay, we bring in our thesis statements, and then he has us read them out, and then everyone can contribute. And that is incredibly important to me because I'll get in my own head, I'll start doubting my work. And so the ability for not only like a professor or faculty to comment on my work, but to have other students' input is exceptionally important for me. And I don't think I had that necessarily in an online class because it's like you get straight down to business and then it's just all content, work. But in an in-person class, especially, and I think it may be different for like a math class, of course, but you know, for me, all my classes are literature-based. You can bounce off other people and you can engage in that way. But the online course was, I think this is specific to Dr. Bandhauer's class, but the readings that we did, and then she gives us a chance to talk about them, and then again personal experiences, because it's such a deeply, the conversation was just about I guess racism against Latinos in America and their experiences and the struggles and the boundaries and barriers that they face. And so a lot of the population of the class was students with that Latino background or Hispanic background. So just to hear those perspectives was fascinating and really interesting. And so everyone could kind of relate and say, oh, I went through that too. I went through that as well. But it just wasn't the same as an in-person class. I definitely feel like an in-person, you just really get more, you get to know people better in an in-person class. And I think that's what helps me as well. I don't want to say having friends in a class, because great if you can, but you won't always have that. But even just like the way I like to differentiate is like you have a school friend and you have a school friend. So having school friends are just like familiar faces that you can come to and people that you can say, having support around you is so important. I know that if I didn't have people that I could ask, hey, what about this? What do you think about this? I would be floundering. So I think especially when professors encourage, you know, group discussion, I love group discussion. That is like my thing. And I took sustainability with Dr. Malavisi last semester, and I would beg her, please, can we do group work? Please, can we do group work? And I know it's not everyone's thing, but it's my thing. Because again, it's one thing to get talked at all day, but it's another to be presented with information. What do you think about it? Talk with your peers around you. So I think group discussion is instrumental for me and my learning.
That's great. I mean, it's great. And you're right. It's not everyone's cup of tea. And as someone who depends on group interactions and collaboration, I hear from students every semester that it's not their thing. Or I'll ask, you know, in a mid-semester checkup, you know, what we should keep doing. And students will say, oh, group work. And then at the end, the reflection says, I hate group work. And it's tough to manage, as I'm sure you can see when you watch faculty try to negotiate with students around those sorts of learning strategies, it's tough to ensure that all the students feel comfortable with whatever strategy we're using.
If I may add something, it's completely relevant. Those workshops that I mentioned, our thesis workshop and our Caribbean literature class for our final essay, literally on Tuesday, we were debating because he'd asked us, you know, it's going to be our final class. Like, do you guys want to come in and you can all, you know, contribute? Or would you prefer like a one-on-one thing? 50-50 split. Some people were like, no, I just want to talk to you. I just want to get it done. And then others were like, oh no, I like, you know, the collaborative environment. So we came to a compromise. He's going to block out some time for the people. And, you know, the group people can do what they want. So I think that that's another thing where professors meet us where we're at. I think it's, there's no one size fits all with teaching. And that's what I really appreciate when they're not, you know, they're not going to give a blanket statement. Okay, you have to do this. And because no one's going to contribute if you're not feeling comfortable, if it's not something that you want to do. So when professors take the time to understand what students feel comfortable doing, that's, I like that a lot.
That's an excellent point. And I will say that you may not be familiar with Universal Design for Learning, but it's a series of principles that should be guiding us in the way we teach. One of the guiding principles is the effort to give students options.
Yeah.
And those options allow students to lean into their strengths. It allows students to learn from other students often and to learn new strategies from faculty and from other students. Are there particular kinds of projects that have worked for you as an inspiration for your learning?
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, so in a couple of courses that I teach, I've asked, for example, students to develop film treatments around the content of the course. Okay. So taking content that focuses on the past, in my case, often the very far away past, and then turning it into a story that's told from using modern technology. So that's a project that I often, a structure that I often use. So that sort of thing, but in your world, in literature, right, or even from high school.
Well, it's not literature, but going back to Dr. Malavisi's class, she had given us a practicum project, and the whole class is about sustainability, so she had told us, you know, pick something that you want to do, a way that you can implement sustainable changes in your everyday life. I'm a vegetarian. It's in April will be my 3-year vegiversary, but I was like, let me try being vegan for a month because, you know, we do a lot of talking about the meat industry and how, you know, dairy and how that, you know, but that's all like facts and statistics. I want to see if I can do it. Is it feasible for the everyday person? It's not. I learned it's not really. I had to cut it 5 days short. And then not only was it my project, but then everyone presented at the end and I got to see what 15 other people did to implement sustainable changes in their lives. And that was not only fun, but it was actually educational. I really did learn something from that. And it was just seeing, well, one, what sustainability means to everyone else. And then not everyone can make the same changes. So it was a real life application. So it was different for sure and actually beneficial to me.
An excellent example. Other sorts of learning experiences that have sparked your imagination?
I feel like I keep deviating away from literature. But,
no, that's fine. We are all multiple learners,
yeah,
aren't we?
In most of my literature classes, it's been mainly, you know, essays and taking all that in. So there isn't much wiggle room. But with that class with Dr. Bandhauer, the very last project was an art project. And I thought that was really cool. And so I wrote a poem because to me, though I am not of Latino or Hispanic descent, my parents are immigrants from Lebanon. So there are some crossover. And in the readings that we've done, a lot of it resonated with me. So my poem was kind of about the experiences of being like a woman of color and growing up with that background and again the barriers and boundaries that you faced. So, and then the same thing after I did it, I got to see everyone else's. There were paintings done, there were songs written, there were presentations done, and I think again once again it comes down to that personal experience. That was phenomenal for me. It wasn't just do the reading and answer the questions. It was how can you connect that to your own life and what can you share with us and what have you learned and how have you grown from those experiences? What have you gone through that shaped who you are? So I will never forget that project.
Oh, what a great example. So project-based learning then has been sort of instrumental in your positive experiences.
Yes.
Here. It's good to know. I mean, we need to learn from our students what works for them. And so I know that I and most of my colleagues will keep asking students just like you. Now, just to sort of circle on back and close out the conversation for now, although I expect I'm going to ask you back to talk about this again, but also to talk about what, you know, constitutes a negative experience for you. But we're not going to do that today.
Okay.
Today, I want you to, why don't you describe if you could create a dream course, and you can talk about content here, but also talk about what that would consist of for learners in the class. What would that dream course look like?
Okay. So at first my mind went to very like open, not so restrictive, but actually I think I would, you know, I don't want to be, you know, tight fist, but as a learner myself, I do need some guidance. And I think a lot of people are the same way. For example, when I am writing an essay, and I do a lot of essay writing as an English major, sometimes the professor will just say, okay, you can write about whatever you want. Whatever I want, but I don't know what I want. And so I've asked, hey, can you give some, you know, prompts to choose from? And they can be open-ended. But I think a lot of students just need, like I mentioned that light post earlier, they need their North Star. They need some kind of guidance because I'm not used to having that kind of freedom. And it's not that I don't necessarily, I couldn't do it on my own, but I do like having some, you know, some guidance for that. I also think that expectations are very important to me because I know, and clarity in that same vein, I do not like ambiguous. I don't like not knowing. And I found that a lot of times when I get most frustrated and most confused is when I can't figure out exactly what the professor is looking for. And I understand, again, it's that not wanting to take control. And I know it's from as good intentions, but I really, really need to know what is being expected of me and what I am, you know, what they're looking for. So that is something I'd make sure of. I don't want students to think that they're going to mess up or that they're not going to meet my expectations of them. Content, I didn't think too much about. I'm thinking, you know, more of, we were just talking about projects. I think projects are, they can be overwhelming, especially if they're long-term. So for me, it's kind of like a small reprieve, you know, it's a change of pace. So, I guess thinking about what we've been talking about, discussions are very important for me. Readings, I would probably give some readings, and not just reading things that I think are very important, instrumental to learning and supplementing in that way, you know, relevant to whatever the course may be, but then also talking about it. So like what Dr. Levy will do, she'll pose a question, we'll answer it, and then we'll talk about what that means in the context, what that means real life applicable to now and how we can do that. So I think my classes would be structured that way. And then we have something read, and it does rely on students doing the reading. And that has been an issue in the past. If you don't read, you can't obviously partake in the conversation, but I would trust my students that they're going to read. They read it. And then we come and we talk about it, and we don't just talk about what we read, what it means, and how we can connect that to us. And then, you know, some fun project, you know, just to shake things up a little bit, give them something to do very hands-on, like was mentioned before, just to give them, I don't know, a break from, you know, but not too many projects because it does get overwhelming.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I'm sure we're going to circle on back to this because you're an engaging conversationalist and because you have a lot to offer, and we don't ask students enough what we should be doing to help to inspire them, which is in the end what our job is supposed to be, right? You know, it's a struggle for us because we spent a long time in school and we want to be able to share what we know, but there are different ways of doing that.
Yes,
there are limits to what we should be sharing.
Yeah.
And so talking with students is really important for us to get at those benchmarks. So thank you. I can't tell you again how pleased I am that you've joined the SELT Advisory Committee and that you're here with me today in the studio. Coming up on SELT Tipple will be a conversation about AI with President Singh. In conversation with historian Wynn Gadkar Wilcox, moderated by management professor Pauline Asenza. So that's one of the upcoming podcasts. As always, thanks again to producer Scott Volpe and to illustrious engineer Pete Puccio. We couldn't be here without you, Pete, and thank you for all of your help. And signing off for now, I'm Leslie Lindenauer, Director of the Center for Excellence in Learning and Teaching at Western Connecticut State University in Danbury, Connecticut. See you soon. Bye.
Tipple is a production of WCSU Media, engineered by Peter Puccio and produced by Scott Foltzman. Listen and subscribe on Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or anywhere you get your podcasts. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at WCSU Podcasts and on the university's Facebook and Twitter pages. And feel free to reach out to us by email at podcasts@wcsu.edu. Thanks for listening.
WCSU.
And you're doing great. You're doing great. Just I want you to breathe.
Not good at that.
I know. Well, as a fellow asthmatic, I understand that entirely. But I want just relax into it. You're doing great.
Okay.